Welcome to the V-Wave Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by River Runners for Wilderness and is created by a cast of river lovers who understand the river resource comes first. On the shoulders of a healthy river, do we recreate ourselves? What comes second is river access, a very thorny V-Wave, all in itself. The V-Wave discusses these things and river ecology, recent river trips, river history, river management, and new changes on rivers. Have a topic you'd like to hear more about or help discuss? Get in touch with me, your host, Tom Martin, at rrfw.org. That's T-O-M-M-A-R-T-I-N at rrfw.org. Special thanks to Char and Trev, who came up with this idea. Today is August 28th, 2023. Welcome to another V-Wave podcast. Today's guest is Jeff Ingram, who has been advocating for Grand Canyon for well over 60 years. And I wanted to give Jeff a call today to get his take on the new national monument that was just created on the north and south sides of the Grand Canyon. Jeff Ingram, welcome to the V-Wave.
Thank you very much for asking me, Tom. I love to talk about the Grand Canyon. And today, well, not just today, but this date, August 8th, 2023, that is a big deal date. And this is a, excuse the pun, grand moment.
Nice. Hey, Jeff, would you mind to give us a little biographical sketch of your work and your place as you see it in Grand Canyon?
Let me do it this way, Tom. I don't want to go on about myself, but what I'm going to tell you will cover some of the high points in my history with the Grand Canyon.
Excellent.
Because I see this moment, as I say, both in the human and political history of the Grand Canyon, but one of the two or three most exciting events in my 60-some years with the Grand Canyon.
Okay.
And so I can't really talk about the monument without getting excited because it has to do with me, too, in spite of the fact that I didn't even manage to get up to the proclamation ceremony. Would have loved to have been there, but when you reach my advanced age, sometimes you don't have the transportation abilities. So let's just say that we're going to start talking about events that were kicked off by proclamation of Baj Nuwajo Itakukveni National Monument. I tried to say it correctly and slowly, like President Biden did when he declared it back on August 8th. Remember that date? And I want to say, talk about this day in sort of two ways. I want to convince you, if I can, that this is a new era for the Grand Canyon. From this month, a new era, think about that, not just a big date, but a new era. And to do that, I'm going to try and talk about the greater Grand Canyon, because what's happened is an expansion, what I hope will be, an expansion of our concept, our perspective of the Grand Canyon, not just, well, let me just leave it there. And because what I want to do is to get people to recognize the greater Grand Canyon and to think about protecting it, just like we would talk about recognizing and protecting the national park. Now we've got this greater concept. And the second thing, the second basis, I want to talk about this monument as a big step in a dream I've had for 60 years, since 1966. It would be easier if you all have a map of the Grand Canyon in your heads or in front of you, but let me go ahead and just talk about it. And I want to first of all go back to what was the worst nightmare time for the Grand Canyon in what I would consider its entire history.
Okay.
And that is the proposal to build, and let me just say that the time scene, 1966 to 68, were the big crux years for proposals to build two concrete hydroelectric dams, which would have been followed, not just dams, they're not just pretty little concrete things that are down there, that would have been followed by the total industrialization of the Grand Canyon. The National Park would have become this little, probably a Disneyland. It would have been such a desecration that this nation would have gone down in the history as a destroyer of the Grand Canyon.
Hmm.
But that was what happened. Part of the reason, most of the reason, the big push in the reason is because of people like David Brower, who was executive director of the Sierra Club, and who led the fight to keep the dams out of the canyon, and people like Martin Litton, who knew the Grand Canyon, could talk about it, eloquent, convince people, and frankly, the people of the United States, because defeating the dams was not just some few people. It was a national determination that this industrialization of the canyon would not take place. One of the elements, Tom, and to me a really important one, came in early 1966 when David Brower and Martin Lai were sitting around talking about, we don't want to just be a negative campaign against the dams. How do we make a positive? How do we enlist people in a cause to build something? And the obvious step for us was to say, well, we've got a national park, but the national park includes what? Less than 50% of the Grand Canyon. So what we're going to do is make a proposal by getting some friends in Congress to introduce legislation. Martin and I, with Dave directing, if you like, I remember this altar place in a room. I think the hotel room in New York. But don't hold me to that. The point is, this was an intense, concentrated session where Martin was saying, let's go around the canyon and pick the places and say, do this the way. And we gave birth from that that process of a dream. Now, the dream was of a complete national park for the Grand Canyon. It would include all the canyon. I'm going to stop right here and say, yes, we had a flawed proposal. We included the reservations of the Hualapai and the Havasupai and the Navajo, and that, as well as, and by the way, no, let me not say that at this point. Let me say that also includes lands that were even not yet given to place in Indian reservations. But this was a definitely what's called today a white man's colonization. And that was in 1966. Very quickly, we learned about these flaws, and we retracted and stepped back so that when the Sierra Club in 1967 put out its, revised and let's say complete national park, where complete will be in quotes, because there are lands we did not want to touch.
Okay.
Based on what we thought of as the drainage into the Grand Canyon. We wanted to go, of course, from the beginning up at Perea or Lee's Ferry, sometimes people would say, down to River Mile 277 or Grand Wash Cliff, as we say. We wanted that full main stem of the river. That was a minimum for getting it in there. That without getting the full canyon length, then we could never think we had a complete national park. So that was our goal. And of course, even though people were only beginning to do river trips, we knew, certainly people like Martin knew, had been down there. Dave and I had never been down at that point. And we didn't, but we knew enough to know that that great wilderness adventure had to be saved. That was one of the reasons to make sure that there were no dams. The fight that took place, which I won't go into at all, did save the Grand Canyon. It excluded dams, I will say forever, the way the legislation reads, unless Congress authorizes. So the future has a little bit of a burden, because if somebody speaking in Congress said, let's build a dam, it would be important for the people of the United States to do just what they did back in the 1960s and rise up and said, no, you don't. No, you don't. And indeed, that's what happened on August 8th, that the people of the United States and the person of President Biden rose up and said, no, we're not going to do bad things. We're not going to industrialize the Grand Canyon. We are going to expand the protection even further. Okay, so let me just quickly, I want to go back and give a little context. I feel that I need to say something about the history of the canyon, the history of trying to make a park out of the canyon.
Okay.
Go ahead, Tom.
No, I just said okay.
Okay. And we have to actually go back, drink of water, pardon me, to the 1870s, because this may sound strange, but the first steps in protecting the canyon, and I will say the people who lived there, were the reservations of the Wallapai and the Havasupai. Later on, we got the Navajo Reservation was actually extended on over to the Grand Canyon in 1934. The Southern Paiute Band, the Kaibab Band, has a reservation which just is north of the canyon. But they, like the other bands of the Paiute, were let's call them right now the original residents of the people who lived and used the lands of the Grand Canyon.
Okay.
The other tribes like the Hopi, all the way out to Zuni, and because they are in, their vision includes it, that's why when you look at the monument proclamation, there's talk of the associated tribes, and then there's a list of 11 of them.
Yes.
They don't all have land in the Greater Grand Canyon, but they all have connections of the deepest kind. And so I want to say that's why when we start talking about the park and protection, we have to go back into the 1870s when things were gathering to get those reservations.
Okay.
And interestingly, Tom, the park originated at the same, more or less the same time. I mean, the reservations were like 1882 and 3. And the first park proposal was 1884.
Okay.
By that great river runner, whose name we certainly all know, John Wesley Powell, proposed that there be a Grand Canyon National Park not too long after the first park, Yellowstone. Skipping sort of rapidly, Theodore Roosevelt recognized the need to protect the canyon in a more solid way than it had been, and declared the first Grand Canyon National Monument. There have been, five so far? Anyway, the first one was in 1908. That stimulated the work to get a park, which, of course, was 1919, with some important revisions in the 1920s. And then, as I mentioned before, the Navajo reservation was extended over to the Colorado River to the Grand Canyon, includes the east side of Marble Canyon. It's very important that we understand that. But in a sense, having given you a quick history, I now want to just jump, because in fact, the 21st century, as I say, has introduced this new era. All those park efforts, including the big ones that took place in 1975, after the dams were, what am I supposed to say? The dams were refused. The people turned them down. They then turned, and we got the park legislation through, which did indeed include the entire length of the Grand Canyon and a little bit of other land. And at the same time, the Havasupai land, some of the Havasupai land were repatriated, which is why their reservation is today of the size that it is, instead of that little small one that was started back in the 1880s. Okay, so we jump now to the 21st century. We've got a national park. It's a good size. It's got the whole river. People run the river in their thousands and enjoy it and are environmentally sensitive and are nice people, and they glory in having the Grand Canyon. And I am so glad that the park administration allows them, and it has been a battle, because the Park Service has a certain tendency to want to make rules that don't always make sense. So sometimes it's kind of hard to get onto that river. But the more who do it, the better off they are, and the better off the canyon is. The more friends the canyon has, the better. But bringing us up into the 21st century, to open that, President Clinton, as he left office, armed by then Secretary of the Interior Bruce Babbitt, proclaimed a national monument for the northwest part of the Grand Canyon, which had been sitting out there as part of Lake Mead recreation area and BLM land. And Babbitt and then his boss Clinton got to proclaim the what they call the Grand Canyon Parish National Monument. So the federal land on the north, I should say the north side of the canyon, is almost entirely federalized along the canyon drainage.
Okay.
Okay, but, yeah, are you interrupting?
No, I'm just saying okay.
Okay, all right. So let's get to the 21st century in 2008. And I want to introduce another hero of the Grand Canyon. We go back and we talk about Teddy Roosevelt and what he did by declaring that monument. We talk about David Broward leading the fight to keep the dams out of the canyon. These are heroes of the canyon. Raul Grijalva, who is the, oh, and I should, I have to say this, I don't want to forget, Morris Udall, who has the distinction of being both a terrible opponent of the Grand Canyon when he tried to get dams authorized, and then he got defeated, did 180 in the 1970s, was instrumental in expanding and enlarging the park so it included the entire river. It just happened that Morris Udall came from the same congressional district down in southern Arizona that Raul Grijalva, the current congressman, does.
Okay.
And they are, I mean, they're both, if you will, Grand Canyon heroes. And
nice.
They are both going to go down in history for the great efforts they have made. Now, Grijalva was stirred, when he got involved, it was not just him alone. It was, I mentioned, the Associated Tribes, which is to say the peoples who have lived around in the greater Grand Canyon for centuries. There are the peoples who did. And some of them have reservations, and some of them are a little far away. But the greater Grand Canyon all have, as I've said before, connections of the deepest kind for all of them. So Grijalva on in the legislative side and the Associated Tribes that he was working with became very worried in 2008 and 2009 about a burst of uranium prospecting and activity. I'm not going to go into the details of uranium around the Grand Canyon. Let's just say it's a no-no. Anything we can do to stop it and get rid of what's already going on there will be, again, a great step. But it was not just against, once again, it was not just against some damage, something would damage the canyon. It was also done in the positive sense to say, hey, the drainage of the Grand Canyon that we've been protecting so far, some of it, it's not enough. Let's talk about the watershed of the canyon, which extends it because the canyon has some really big side canyons. And getting those at least partially under protection, and so people recognize that they're part of the canyon, that's important. So we have the drainage that led the earlier expansion of the park. Now we've got the watershed. And what we get, and again, I wish you had a map, so go online for Baj Nuaho, Itah, Kukveni National Monument, and look at the map. And what you'll see at this very exciting thing that happened in August is that, okay, now just think about it. Here's the Grand Canyon, this long, curvy, bent thing with the river running on it, and around it, holding that canyon in their embrace, are the lands of the monument and the other ones that have been, even if they're not declared as a monument, they are populated and have been for centuries by people, as I say, who used, who understood, who comprehended the canyon in their own way. And so, again, think of it, the canyon over here on the southwest, the Hualapai, then the Havasupai, I think the Mungans, is holding the canyon in an embrace. You go around the curve and out there in the east, almost like leading the way. You know, that's what I like to think about, because Baj Nuaho, the name of the monument, which is I just abbreviated, means in the footprints of their ancestors. And the point is, yes, the monument recognizes that, but it says those footprints, the ancestral footprints, are leading us, all of us, into the future of the greater Grand Canyon. They're pointing the way, and that's why I say when you get out of the east and you see the Navajo have, I think we should recognize that just a few years ago, they made another decision that kept protecting the Grand Canyon, and that, of course, was the silly notion of putting a tramway in the Little Colorado and motels on the road. It would have been a terrible thing. And the Navajo stood up themselves. They didn't, nobody told them. They talked about this. They discussed it. They argued about it. And they said, no, we are not going to do that kind of thing at the Grand Canyon. And that was as important as some of these other things, because you just sometimes you have to do things in order that lots more of them don't happen. You just have to say no in the first place. So we get to the Navajo on the east, then we jump the river and we're over in what many of us call House Rock Valley, and it's another piece of Baja Navajo, and at the present time, nobody lives there, though we all know about the bison that are down in House Rock Ranch. And this piece of the new monument comes right up to one of the great physical features of Arizona or the Southwest, and that is the Kaibab Plateau. You know, back in the 1920s, the founder fighter for the National Park Service, Stephen Mather, said he came to the Kaibab and said, this is the Kaibab Plateau, and at that time, uncut forest. He said, this is worthy of national recognition, and he wanted to have a present forest proclaimed out of the Kaibab. Well, that didn't happen, but the fact remains it is still, with all the scars of logging and grazing, then the Kaibab is still, you know, the most important part of what goes on there now is what we call recreation and, of course, watershed. But it is not in the monument. I don't know why. The question I think we should have to answer. So I'm going to skip over it, but I am going to say the Forest Service has got to be included when we think about the Greater Grand Canyon, the Forest Service in the North Kaibab and the Kaibab Plateau. When we get off the edge after that great hump and down, and that we get into another piece of Baja Navajo, and we are in the land of the bands of the Southern Paiute. The Kaibab band has a reservation there, and interestingly, they pretty much run Pipe Springs National Monument. It's a Park Service area, but here we have one of the Greater Grand Canyon people who are already getting experience in how to administer. There's going to be more and more. In fact, it's important that that happen. Then that piece goes on over toward the end of the drainage. And those of us who know the Arizona Strip will remember that at a certain point, you come to the hurricane fault, and there's a big drop, and the drainage into the Grand Canyon actually ceases. And beyond that, the drainage is west over the Grand Wash Cliffs and down into Lake Mead. And look, the Arizona Strip is all wonderful country of one kind or another. But if at this point, in talking about the Greater Grand Canyon, we've got to say, let's keep our definition sort of clean. So we get the greater Grand Canyon, and we talk about drainages, and we talk about watershed. And that's what I hope in the future we will keep on talking about it. Now, when Biden proclaimed the monument using the Antiquities Act and a presidential order, executive order, there were representatives, the Associated Tribes, and that was totally appropriate. It was like a graduation ceremony, and the Grand Canyon and these people, not quite sure how to make this metaphor work, but it was a summa cum laude event. They were graduating into a new future with the greater Grand Canyon, and they couldn't have done it without such great ancestral, with such ancestral beginnings. And I think of those ancestral footprints, as I say, going across the canyon, gathering in these lands which embrace the greater Grand Canyon, and leading out into the future to all of it. The necessity of this, it seems to me, is summed up by thinking about the canyon, but the greater canyon. This place is a world environmental icon. The old question, if we can't save this, what can we save? If we can't save this, we can't save ourselves. And for sure, that question of whether we can save ourselves is open, and we're working on it, we'd like to say. And the Grand Canyon is there, and we should be thinking about it as there to remind us every day. We should have the map up there, and we should be saying that we need to do this because of the Grand Canyon. We have to protect and understand it, recognize it, and understand ourselves, our place in the world, on the earth, even as we go out to places like the moon and the Mars, and we'll never find anything like the Grand Canyon and the earth we have here. So I truly want to think of the canyon, the greater Grand Canyon, in that sense of, as I say, an icon of environmental saving and improving. How are we going to do it? It's not going to be done by Biden proclaimed some pieces of land and said they're now under protection, and we're going to do this administration of it, and it's going to be administration with the Associated Tribes and the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management. And we already have the national park. He didn't say this, by the way, at the meeting, which puzzles us. Another thing I'm a little puzzled about. But nevertheless, the park is there, too. All these participants, residents, administrators of the greater Grand Canyon have, interestingly, the same mandate. Now, what I mean by that is that written into the 1975 Enlargement Act of Grand Canyon National Park, and that act also repatriated the big piece of the Havasupai land. And in the Baj Nuwazo proclamation, each one has a section called about cooperation. Cooperation of owners, participants, administrators, the public, not just the close-in public like you and me who are here, Tom, and you and me who are here in Arizona and visit Canyon, know it, but the wider world who may only have heard the name, if that. but it is extraordinarily important. And that cooperation, as I say, is mandated. What it says in the Park Act is that the Secretary of the Interior is encouraged and authorized to cooperate with basically the associated tribe. They didn't call it that then, but nevertheless, that's what he meant. And any other agencies that want to work on protecting and recognizing and making public the virtues of the Grand Canyon. And in the Baj Nuwajo proclamation, there is the same near mandate, cooperate. In other words, it's not a hierarchical do this, do that kind of setup we now have for the Grand Canyon, the greater Grand Canyon. It is a setup which is only going to work if all these associated tribes, all 11 of them, and all these administrators, think of this, Park Service, Bureau of Land Management, Forest Service, State Game and Fish is involved, and those entities themselves are broken up. But unless these people get together and work to cooperatively exalt, recognize, protect the Grand Canyon, it's not going to work. And that is the big, I don't want to call it a burden, the big opportunity challenge that stands in front of us that has been set by the National Park, holding and protecting that river and side canyons and the plateaus, and now Baj Nuwajo, which symbolizes that embrace of the Grand Canyon that represents the greater Grand Canyon. That's what the idea of the Grand Canyon as an environmental icon means, that you cooperate to protect it. I'm going to stop there, Tom, because I don't know if you have any questions.
Well, I do. I have a couple, and let me start with the second one first, since you're talking about it, which is you've given us a wonderful tour all the way around the Grand Canyon, from Lee's Ferry to the Grand Wash Cliffs, just 277 miles. The managing owners, if you will, the 11 federated tribes, some with actual land holdings and some with distant land holdings, but footprints going back into deep time. Then the agencies, Park Service, Forest Service, BLM, on the federal level, a state game and fish on the state level, state of Arizona, which encompasses all these lands. How were you, it sounds like, I get this right, the drafters of the 1975 Enlargement Act were aware of the many stakeholders, and encouraged the Secretary of Interior to work with all the stakeholders for a unified interpretation of the landscape. Is that correct?
Yes. There was a recognition in the legislation. I don't want to talk too much about the legislation and its flaws, but the real question is whether or not after the law was passed, that idea of cooperation by the Park Service was carried out. And I have to say, in my experience, not so much. And I think part of the problem with that was that everybody looks at their boundaries and says, oh, that's us and nothing outside.
Okay.
But can I give you an example of when it works?
Yes, please, because that's kind of where I'm trying to go. You mentioned that Baj Nuwajo has language that talks about, again, this unified vision of the Grand Canyon, a unified discussion of what the land is and what it needs to be protected.
In fact, Tom, it's not only think of it this way. It not only unifies it in two dimensions on the ground, it also unifies it in time. That's what they mean by ancestral and footprint.
Okay.
So we get the past, and then we say into the future, and that's what cooperation means. If we cooperate, the future can be a bright one.
Go
ahead.
So my question here is, how would you envision when I think of management, okay, who's got the land here, and who do I need to go to? Who do I need to get on the phone to ask about a rule or a regulation? If it's Phantom Ranch, I'm going to call Grand Canyon National Park, and if it's someplace up on the North Rim, I'll call the Forest Service, or if it's out west, maybe Grand Canyon Parishion, I'll call the BLM. How do you see the whole Grand Canyon, the greater Grand Canyon, how do you see that managed by a unified team? How would you envision that be done?
How? With a hell of a lot of work.
Okay.
And goodwill. Now, let me give you an example. In 2000, the then superintendent of Grand Canyon convinced the superintendent of Lake Mead and the chairwoman of the Hualapai tribe to form a working group that would meet two or three times a year, top administrators, superintendents every time, plus the top staff, and, you know, again, I'm talking about the Hualapai and two park units, and they would meet and discuss the elements of river administration, whatever came up, any aspect. Now, it is true that there can be disputes. And one of the things the superintendent did was to say, okay, we're going to meet, but we're first of all going to say, okay, if we have any disagreements, any fundamental disagreements, we're going to set them aside if they don't have to do with river matters. And by agreeing to disagree on some matters that were not critical at that moment, they were able to sit down, and they did it for 5 years. It was a great, having read the minutes of those meetings, I see that as a great example of how at the administrative level, including the tribe, the executive level, all that, you get cooperation, you get discussion, you get decision. And to me, that is a model which just should have been replicated even without Baj Nuajo and the other entities being brought together. But now they've been brought together and told to cooperate. That means you get together and you talk at the administrative top executive level, and you do it in public, and you put out minutes, and you do not just shrug your shoulders and say, oh, well, that's not our territory. Because now, for all those people, the Associated Tribes and the federal and state governmental agencies, it's all their responsibility to do it in a cooperative way. To my mind, and now I will come to, you could say, my role, but mine isn't going to last much longer, but the role of anybody who thinks the Grand Canyon is what I've described it, both a great place to go and be and see, and also a place that tells us we've got to fix the earth or we're going to be in real trouble, or fix ourselves living on the earth or we're going to be in real trouble. And that is, the greater public has to participate. So the greater public has to have ways of reaching the administrators. I don't know how that's going to happen, because it's very easy for people to say, well, this is our land, and we don't want you to come around. Well, that's That's not good enough. The Grand Canyon is not anybody's land, even though it is indeed under the jurisdiction and, if you will, the property, you know, the sovereign nation of the Navajo and the Hualapai. True. But the Grand Canyon enjoins on all those people through this legislation and through these monuments, the Monument Proclamation, enjoins on them to do well, to get together, to work it out, to make, I mean, I can conceive of all kinds of cooperative arrangements. I talked about a river committee for the lower river, but what about the Arizona Strip? What about things to do with how the how people are going to come and use the lands and enjoy the lands? How are they going to come to understand the Grand Canyon in this greater Grand Canyon form that it has now been shaped by the work of Raul Grijalva and the associated tribes? I mean, when they did that, I don't know. You know, I don't know, Tom, if they realized it. Maybe they just thought they were recognizing their own participation in the Grand Canyon. But what they did was something bigger than themselves. And that thing will grow, and I hope, and prosper. And if it doesn't, it will fall over and crush them because it won't be meaningful, and the people who want to exploit it will come and figure out ways to do that. The cooperation has to be founded on the notion of protecting the greater Grand Canyon. And it's going to be a lot of work, and I wish I were 25 instead of 86, because I would love to participate in what's going to happen over the next 10, 20, 30 years, because I think it's going to be tremendously exciting. I think that the and a little cliche, the future is really bright if we get out our rubbing rags and start shining it up.
So it seems as though the Secretary of Interior, the administration, has a key role to play to unify all the stakeholders. Not unify, but to bring all the stakeholders together and do these meetings and allow the public to observe, to look toward a unified interpretation of the Grand Canyon. Would that be the correct way to sort of think about approaching this? As you say, getting out the rags to start polishing. Who's gonna lead that show, if you will?
I can't answer that. I don't know.
Okay.
If Raul Grijalva were appointed as administrator of the Greater Grand Canyon Cooperative, capital E effort, I would think that would be a great symbolic thing, but I wouldn't leave it on him or on the shoulders of any one person, because cooperation means they're all in it together.
Right.
We are all in it together, and sometimes it's really difficult because people tread on each other's toes. You know, there's a lot of things that have been argued about. The Grand Canyon invites argument, I'm sorry yes. to say. And the great thing about what I see this monument producing is, we argued in the past and we drew boundaries and all of that, but that's changed. You've created something greater than yourselves, greater than what you thought the Grand Canyon was, and that's what you have to work on. That's what you have to protect. That's what you have to cooperate by going to work with each other. And you've never done this before, I'll bet. Figure it out. That's the challenge. Now, having said that, I would say it would be wonderful if we had a federal government which would lead the way. But as you know, Tom, as Americans know, the federal government today is kind of under siege, and nobody knows what's going to happen. So I'm perhaps talking about a happy future, which isn't all that assured. But
Right, and I'm naive enough to kind of point in that direction, but clearly, any sort of I like this, you know, concept of a unified group has to be clear or free of the political winds that blow once every 4 years or so in Washington, D.C., so that the people that are there, the people that surround the Grand Canyon, that either have traditional roots that go back into deep time, or agencies that have recent roots, can work together on common goals, on shared ideas and principles. That all sounds good. It's going to be very fascinating to see. I guess this is what you're saying. It all sounds good. It can be really bright. But the proof's going to be in the details, in the pudding, in the decades ahead.
Yes.
Okay.
And I would hope, that the Associated Tribes, give them that name that's in the proclamation and that is used generally because they are individual tribes. They have their own histories and their own connections to the canyon. But I would hope that they and the governmental agencies will be able to say, this is something new and we're going to take it on and we're going to make it work.
Nice.
And
yeah.
It's going to mean, you know, the Navajo and Hopi have a long history. And it's just one of those things that if the Grand Canyon can bring them together to work for the Grand Canyon, work for the future of the Earth is what it means. That's what I mean by environmental icon. You do good for the Grand Canyon and it's going to redound. If you don't mind, I will simply go back and say, look at that decision about the dams. If that decision had gone the other way, as I said, the desecration and the destruction of the American West would have continued and accelerated. It would have been unbelievable.
Yeah.
But instead, we changed direction in this country, and what we call the environmental movement bloomed and blossomed. And all right, we've got a lot of history. But now I'm saying, here's the Grand Canyon, and something has been done, which says, wake up, show us how we can do it. Let's work together, and the greater Grand Canyon will live up to that status of being an environmental icon that says, save us all by saving the Earth.
Okay. I think that might be a great place to close out this V-Wave podcast. What do you think?
Well, I've said my piece. I'm quite willing to sit down and let the hordes of people who are younger than me trample forward to save the Grand Canyon. That's always been my belief, that it's necessary to encourage new ways of new people.
Excellent. Jeff Ingram, thank you so very, very much for your time today in this V-Wave podcast. Today is Monday, August 28th, 2023. And Jeff, thank you so very much.
You're very, very welcome.